open the committee hearing on Subcommittee on Human Services. Today is Tuesday, June 19th. I'm a little confused because I didn't have paper before me. Thank you, ma'am. We have a public hearing and a work session, and the public hearing is only because some people signed up yesterday and we carried it over. So I'm just calling the people that are on this roll for something like 443A relating to the placement of children. And I really don't need but about 2 or 3 minutes from people. You're going to call me mean, but I will stop you today only because I think you want the bill. Is that right? And if you want the bill, I don't need to have you talk long today. Please, please hear me. So I'd like to call Representative Krieger. And let's have Ms. Miller and Mr. Mark McKechnie to come up with you. Representative Krieger, welcome. How are you?
Thank you very much, Chair Carter, committee members. For the record, I'm Wayne Krieger, State Rep of District 1, South Coast, over to I-5 at Winston-Dinner. I will be brief because you asked me to. You know the passion of the work group that spent 14 months to...
Cindy, you were the creator of the bill. We're not rushing you. We're just rushing the other people who are going to compliment you what they have to say.
Thank you, but if you said you wanted it short, that would be the way it would be. But there was a passion, as I told you, in the meetings that we had, and as a result of the Sunsky Review Committee, what we found with DHS and the help that we had from the director, Ramona Foy, it's all been, I think, positive, and I think this is a part of it. This particular bill is a critical piece of the dependency package. It's based on many months of research and many years of experience and is evidence-based. It focuses the attention of DHS and the courts as best practice, which is known to improve the lives of children in foster care. We know outcomes for children in foster care are grim. Many of these children end up homeless after they age out of the foster care system. They experience school and placement instability, which frequently leads to behavioral problems and mental health issues. Foster care is meant to be a temporary solution when children are unsafe. The longer children spend in foster care, the worse their outcomes become. That is why it is important to focus attention on practices which are known to make a positive difference. In particular, these practices are placing children with relatives, keeping siblings together while in foster care. And that particular one, Senator, was a focal point for Senator Brown, because she's dealt in it and she's seen the devastation. Ensuring children in foster care have the business with their families, keeping children safe by ensuring they have face-to-face contact with caseworkers, promoting schools to value high school graduation, making sure children don't experience unnecessary placement changes, maintaining a focus on finding a permanent home. This bill requires DHS to make diligent effort to ensure family connections are maintained by keeping siblings together and placing children with relatives whenever possible. It is our responsibility to ensure that once these children are removed from the home and placed in custody of the state, that they will make diligent efforts to ensure that they are the best placement possible and that we give them the best chance at success we possibly can. The Public Safety Committee has identified funding to cover the fiscal estimate associated with this bill. I encourage you to pass this bill and start making a difference in the lives of children. I had, I think I talked to you one time before, 12 foster children over the years. Mm-hmm. And one of those children comes back, got when he was 9 years old. He's now 43, and he still comes home. And he still does the same things today in our home that he did 30 years ago. Comes in, opens the refrigerator. And so they...
Typical child.
Yeah. They do attach to us when we have them longer. But this is a good, good bill. The work group worked long and hard. The Attorney General was a great assistance and his input, as were many others. So do what you can for the kids.
I really appreciate you guys' work on this so very, very much. I know you guys took about 18 months to do all of this work, so we don't take that lightly.
Thank you. Ready for motion, Madam Chair?
Oh, I know you've done a great job, but we have some other people. Thank you, Senator. Any questions or comments? Any questions or comments for Representative Krieger? Thank you very much, Representative, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Chair Carter, members of the subcommittee, I will defer to Senator Westland if you would rather, by all means. But it is, my name is Amy Miller. I'm a staff attorney at the Juvenile Rights Project. I also brought written testimony if you'd like me to pass it out. I just wanted to say it's a privilege to be here to offer up support for this bill, Senate Bill 414. And as the representative noted, it's been a work in progress for many, many years and really arose out of continued frustration that the child welfare system doesn't adequately serve children in some cases. And as a result, sometimes there's some poor outcomes associated with that. I do want to make one quick point, and then I will be quiet, and that is just that the bill requires DHS to make a heightened effort, which is called diligent efforts in the bill, to place children with relatives and keep siblings together. And I just want to point out to the members of the committee that diligent efforts in no way affects federal funding that is tied to reasonable efforts determinations. They're two separate things. Reasonable efforts occur when either taking it, you have to make reasonable efforts to either prevent a child from being removed from the home and also to return the child. Diligent efforts occur once a child would come into care, and we believe that it is so critical to make sure that these children are taken care of, placed with family, siblings kept together, that diligent efforts are appropriate. Thank you so much for letting me make a couple of comments. I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Questions? Thank you, Ms. McKechnie.
Thank you, Chair Carter and members of the committee. I will also be brief. The bottom line in this bill is that these are research-driven strategies to promote better outcomes in the juvenile dependency system. This bill will focus the efforts of the entire juvenile court system, the courts, DHS, and the other players on strategies that research shows will work in promoting the well-being, safety, and permanency of children. And we feel that it is more effective to emphasize the work of everyone on those efforts up front so we can promote the best outcomes possible and avoid having to expend much more energy and wasted energy down the road to try to pick up the pieces. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Madam Chair?
Senator Gorgay,
to Mr. McKechnie, who is one of my constituents, just want to acknowledge and honor your leadership and your work and the work of all of you on this measure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Next, the calling department up, Mr. George, along with Mr. George, Ms. Cochran, and Mr. Tower.
Now I know you're ready for a motion, Madam Chair.
Please. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kathy Kaufman. I'm the Policy Director for Children First for Oregon, and I, too, will be very brief. I'm here to state our support for SB 414. We think that the bill is the right move at the right time. We'll make much-needed improvements in the safety and well-being of the over 16,000 children in Oregon right now who are in some form of out-of-home care. I would like to simply remind you of a quote in a report from the National Child Welfare Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, saying of Oregon's system, families stay in the system longer and safety is difficult, if not impossible, to assure. Clearly, this is not what we want said of the child protective system in Oregon. We think this bill will take the right step in the right direction to make necessary changes. Thank you.
Mr. George.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, my name is Kevin George. I work as the foster care program manager at the Department of Human Services, Children, Adults, and Families. I have provided you a written testimony on Senate Bill 414A-4, the Dash 4 amendment. I won't repeat what everybody else has said today. We've worked pretty collaboratively over the number of months during this session as well as others, and I think this is a piece of legislation that can certainly move forward. We did add on the Dash 4 amendment. It was a policy request that we had in another bill as a result of federal law changes. And it allowed the federal law and federal regulations change to allow us to use foster care maintenance payments for for-profit agencies rather than just non-profit agencies. And it's just a federal law change that changed in January of 06, so this is our first legislative session in order to get this bill in, or this amendment in, and that's what Amendment 4 is all about. I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gorley, thank you. The report that we have from Ms. Baker indicates that, I'm looking in the third paragraph, colleagues,
indicates that the term diligent is undefined and thus open to legal interpretation. She goes further to say we believe this aspect of the bill should be discussed further at this hearing. Could you say more about the interpretation of the word diligent from the perspective of the department?
Senator, I'm just going to close the hearing portion of this and open a work session on Senate Bill 414A4. And I'd like for you, Mr. George, to stay here so if there are further questions from the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your answer to the senator's question.
Certainly. Chair Carter, Senator Cordley, the term diligent was a highly discussed term earlier this session. It is in relationship to that we currently have, by federal law, a requirement to have a reasonable effort. The court must find that the department is making reasonable efforts to prevent a child from coming into foster care and reasonable efforts to assist a child returning home from foster care. In addition, there's also another federal term of active efforts. If the child is a Native American child, we must be making active efforts. As Judge Waller from Multnomah County Juvenile Court testified in the bill on the Senate side earlier this session, it is up to the judge to make that determination and define what active means, what reasonable means, and therefore it would be her contention that diligent also will be defined by the judge. It's an issue that we have talked about, and we've had a number of folks testify to the extent that the purpose of diligent is something above reasonable, below active, but for specific components such as sibling placements, education stability, visitation, that we should be having a more diligent effort involved. So a judge will be making a determination, and the department will be adhering to the judge's order around did they find a diligent effort or a reasonable effort on certain conditions.
Just to follow up briefly.
Sure.
So you mentioned the example of Native American children. As Senator Winters and I were talking after committee yesterday, we shared a concern about African American children, and again how this term might apply, given the experience of the department.
Chair Carter, Senator Gordley, how this might actually apply is, you know, if I gave an example of an 18-year-old young man who has been in foster care for 5 years, and we no longer have contact with his parents or family as a result of their drug abuse, and they've kind of gone out of the picture. A court may find that we're making a reasonable effort to help this young man transition to adulthood by developing comprehensive transition plans, working on their education, their housing, their employment. But a court then may also say, and department or Mr. George, what are you doing about their connections to other folks, meaning that he has an older sibling who happens to be 24 that lives in Tennessee. So it may be that we get involved with a project that I know you're familiar with, reconnecting families.
Yes.
So identifying other familiar relationships, and it may be a sibling out there, an older sibling, that we can then try to reconnect that young person to say, you have a brother who lives in Tennessee, and here's some information on how to connect them up. So the judge might then say, not only, department, are you making a reasonable effort to help this young man transition on to adulthood, but you're also making a diligent effort to keep that sibling connection with him, even though that other sibling's an adult. That might be an example of how I would perceive a reasonable effort and a diligent effort finding within court.
Good example. You've answered the question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And that is a very serious question because African-American kids tend to stay longer in the system unadopted, and so that was a very good question, Senator, for you to have asked. Are there further questions since we are in a work session on Senate Bill 414?
You ready for a motion, Madam Chair?
I am. Senator?
I move the...
Excuse me. Ms. Baker, you need to have yourself. Thank you.
My job, Madam Chair.
It is. I see.
I just wanted to take a minute to cover the fiscal impact of this. Assuming that this is approved and moved forward, the fiscal impact will be included in House Bill 5031, the budget bill for Department of Human Services. What we have identified as the fiscal impact is $80,204 general fund and $80,204 federal funds for the Department of Human Services, and that's related to attorney general costs and modification of the database to do the work that the bill requires. I would want to note that there are workload impacts on the Judicial Department, the Attorney General, and the Department of Human Services, for which they're not getting additional staff or additional funding, but there is a workload impact as well. But the actual what we're calling the hard costs, the tangible costs, are the ones that I identified for the database and the Attorney General time, and that's what would be added to the department's budget bill. And the dash A4 amendments have no fiscal impact associated with them.
Good question. Mrs. Seki,
yes.
Why don't you come forward? Since you will be obviously eating some cost here, have you anticipated this bill?
Chair Carter, for the record, Clyde Seike, Deputy Director for Operations for the Department of Human Services. And we have, as you know, our Children, Adult, and Families Division has worked very closely with the committee. And as we've done that, we've also analyzed the workload impact and the benefit we'll gain out of the passage of this bill. Won't create a the workload is well worth the time and effort.
The task force had told me that, but I just wanted for you to have it on record for the benefit of any questions that members might have, and especially for those that are going to be carrying the bill to the full committee on each of the floors. Thank you very much. Any questions further of Mr. Seike?
Madam Chair, I move the dash fours into Senate Bill 414.
Senator Westland moves the dash four amendments to Senate Bill 414. Questions? Objections? Seeing none. Senator Westland?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 414 as amended to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Westland moves Senate Bill 414A to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation. Comments? Objections? Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say that I think this is a tremendously important bill, and I'm pleased to see it here, and I hope we move it forward and get it past the session. I would take a little issue with the workload issues, not because I think this will cause more workload necessarily. I don't think we quite know what the workload issues are, and I think that staffing study is going to be very important for a whole host of reasons. But I'd rather see these in place and then base our workload study on what we are should be doing in 414. So I look forward to that study and really support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further comments? Objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Volunteer to the full committee?
Madam Chair, I would recommend that perhaps Representative Krueger carry the bill on the House side.
On the House side, thank you very much. It's Ben.
I'll carry it to full, Madam Chair.
Senator Westland on the full committee and the Senate floor. Thank you very much. I'd like to now open the work session on House Bill 5031, Department of Human Services. Ms. Baker?
Thank you. We have a paper that will be coming around. One of the first things that we wanted to do before we got into the actual budget issues and budget adjustments on this bill was to touch base on a couple of outstanding issues, and I will hand out a follow-up that the department did on questions on the legal representation package in the Children, Adults, and Families budget. So I'll hand that out to you, and you can look at that. We also wanted to cover the distribution of the mental health $10 million general fund that was added in the budget, and John Britton will speak to that. And then the subcommittee asked to have some additional information from the department on how they would look at the network of care type website funding, the $400,000 that was included in the preliminary budget for that. So we will cover that discussion, then we will review a few adjustments to the budget bill and then the conceptual amendments for that. Then we will review the budget notes that are proposed for this budget, and then finally the key performance measures. And so we have about 1 hour to get through all of that.
That's
material.
Nice. Thank you. Okay. Mr. Whitman, we'd like you to talk about the distribution.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I just handed out a simple spreadsheet showing the distributions of the $10 million to community mental health. You can see three columns. One is the program where the money would go. The second column is the work session that we did on June 13th, the distribution. And the third column, the first one on the right, is the work session for today with respect to this distribution. My understanding is, Madam Chair and members, that the June 19th distribution was agreed to by the Mental Health Coalition. You can see that there have been some changes for today's distribution. There was the elimination of further funding for crisis management. There is funding of $3 million rather than $2 million for children's services. And finally, there's a change on line 9 to give local administration $500,000, and on line 10, the addition of $1.5 million for acute care. So those are the changes that have occurred based on the Mental Health Coalition's work over the last week.
Thank you. I want to take this time to give lots of thanks to Senator Gordley and the coalition for the work that you have done and how diligent you've been for meeting every Thursday throughout this session. And I appreciate immensely your direction on how things should be divided, and I appreciate that a lot, so I want to give thanks there. Questions on Senator Gordley?
Thank you. If I could just make a slight correction, Madam Chair.
Okay.
The group that you referred to that has been meeting weekly in the Capitol since about the beginning of session, and this is a group that I convened together with Representative Maurer and with Bob Junedep from the Oregon Advocacy Center, all of us acting as co-chairs, is the Mental Health Caucus.
Okay.
There is another entity called the Mental Health Coalition that has also been meeting, and that group has had representation at most of the Mental Health Caucus
okay.
meetings. So just want to be very clear about the difference in the two groups.
Thank
and make that clear for the record.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarity. So I want to give kudos to the Mental Health Caucus with Mr. Junedep and Representative Maurer for your work every Thursday morning on issues around this whole issue of mental health, let alone community mental health and all the work that you've done. So thank you for that. Questions on the issue that you've gotten from the Department of Human Services, Community Mental Health? Any questions? Representative Kotek?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question on, with the $2 million not being funded in crisis management, what are we losing there? What's the gap that might be created by that? I'm just curious.
The information that I was given was that it wouldn't be that if we'd had the money, they'd know for every one of these areas to have been funded. But they considered a need more critical in children's services than they did in the crisis management as well as acute care. Because when people are in crisis, they basically go to the hospital first. And so, therefore, they asked to redivide how we distribute the money and how we had originally distributed the money. A follow-up?
You may. Thank you for that clarification. And the 1.5 in acute care, what impact will that have in terms of our crisis services?
In presently, that when they first become ill, they basically need a place to go to, and the hospital is the first place that they go to.
I'm sorry, I wasn't very clear.
The hospital component.
Are we guaranteeing a certain number of beds with this additional investment, or do we know? I'm just curious. I want to make sure.
I don't really know whether they're doing that. I did talk with the hospital people, and that question did not come out of me, and so it was not forwarded in terms of how many beds are reserved for that reason. Representative Nicholson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about line 3. There had been...
Ms. Nicholson, come, please. Go on.
Thank you. There had been an allocation toward worker wages, and I see that that has now been redirected to help with acute care, for example, and some of the other rebalancing. But in some areas, we've seen that worker wage adjustments upward were necessary because of a high turnover rate and losing experience and even having an unsafe level of vacancies, for example. What was this line intended for, and what will be the consequences of having removed that?
Well, comments that they gave me from workers was that if we were going to do anything, and strengthening the services to programmatically were more important at the moment. If we had had more money, they really do need a raise. But since it was only a small amount of money, they'd rather see it to go to programs as opposed to going to wages at this particular time.
Thank you for the answer.
You bet. In terms of the $1.5 million, how many beds would be allocated for that?
Member, Madam Chair, for the record, Bob Nickel, Assistant Director of the Department of Human Services and responsible for the Addictions and Mental Health Division. The $1.5 million, I believe, will assure that there will be no closures of acute care capacity. The state has actually lost acute care beds over the last 10 years. We lost Lane County Psychiatric Hospital, for example, and a couple of other units have closed. Most of these units are within the hospital financial picture are not moneymakers. In fact, we're told, and I believe, that they probably tend to not make any money at all. And so the $1.5 million would be to go for state, for non-Medicaid eligible, in other words, indigent clients who have no insurance and are not Medicaid eligible, so that the hospitals have some assurance that when they admit these patients, and they really don't have a lot of choices, they pretty much have to admit them, but they have a fair compensation for them. One of the things that we'll do is look, first of all, at a couple of regions that are severely under the state per capita average. Lane County is an example of that. When you look at their allocations, they are significantly below the statewide average for regions. So we would look at shoring up some of the below average per capita counties or regions, and then we would find ways to make sure that these dollars go to shore up those hospitals that are struggling.
Thank you very much. If you recall that Dr. Robin Henderson, I think it is, talked with us, that here she is way down in Central Oregon in Bend, and she's having to take patients from Multnomah County, Washington, and Clackamas counties because we've not had any beds. So as she walks in, and she has not had beds for them, so she's been having to offset costs from the valley down into to Bend. So we are serving a useful purpose, and we wish we'd had more money to do this, but we don't, and that's where we are at this particular point.
Small correction, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Bend is not so far away, and Robin Henderson.
I just saw her. That's right. Dr. Bates.
I am far away in Southern Oregon.
Yeah, that we all agree.
Okay. A question for Mr. Nichols, if I could, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I understand that the EASE program is an add back somewhere else in the budget now. I'd like to know what your comment on that is. And I appreciate the work by the chair on this, giving $10 million into the budget to start working on mental health problems. As we're all very aware, we have a revolving door in our hospitals right now for the mentally ill, and we have a revolving door in our jails. We're filling up our jails with people who have committed crimes because of the mental illness, and we are just putting our people out in the community over and over and over again. So it's important we have community support for this, especially in light that we're going to rebuild a new mental health hospital, possibly two in the state, which will be frankly overrun if we don't get our local communities back where they used to be 20 years ago. So what's your feeling about the total impact of this package right now? Is it a big enough step in the right direction?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, it's a good step in the right direction. If you look at the Community Services Work Group report, you'll see, frankly, a much bigger number. But I don't think anybody expected we would get $105.9 million into the adult system this session. But I think it was an attempt to say, by perspective, where we need to get to by the time the new state hospitals, the new state psychiatric facilities. I think we're going to try hard not to call them state hospitals for a variety of reasons, but to assure a system that can operate on the number of beds that we plan for now. We have to approach this issue, and I frankly applaud the committee very much for being willing to take this additional step. Will it solve all the problems of jails, homelessness, pressure on the acute care hospitals? No, it won't do that. But it is a strong step in the right direction.
Madam Chair.
Okay.
That makes me scratch my head. Follow up.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Maybe I asked two questions at the same time. I think I did. The EASE program?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, thank you for the reminder about the EASE program. The EASE program, as you may recall, is an early psychosis intervention program. It's not experimental anymore, in my opinion. It's been operational in the Mid-Valley area here for over 5 years. 70% of the young people who come in between the ages of 16 and 24 end up getting back into a real life, i.e., back into school, back into job situations, 70%. If we could do this statewide, and the $4.4 million that we anticipate here would allow us to expand probably into two or three more regions of the state, would really begin to, again, take a strong step in the right direction. My personal goal, my professional goal, is to see this service available to every family and every kid that has a psychosis in the state, because over time, I think that's really the solution to the capacity issues, the homelessness issues, all of those things for most people.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really respect what Bob Nickel is saying to us about the step in the right direction that we're making with this investment. But I want us all to be very, very clear that that's all it is. It's a step. We're still in a crisis. And I don't believe I am overstating the case. We do not have enough front-end or community-based treatment and services in place to serve the demand that is there now. That does not exist. The other urgent need and crisis is around the patients who remain in the state hospital. We need to get those patients out of the hospital yesterday. That is still a crisis. So we should not feel like, you know, the step is the end of the work, the really hard work that is in front of us, and the continuing work that we need to do around educating the co-chairs, educating other members of the body about the level of investment that's going to be required to get past the crisis. But that is still where we are. We're in a crisis mode. This is a step. I'm going to call it a token investment because that's what it is. And when you look at the list of services that was generated by the Mental Health Coalition and the type of investment that it would take to bring us up to the level of to meet the level of need, well, Mr. Nickel, that amount of money would be what? It's
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, the Community Services Workgroup report, which I think is a pretty solid estimate, suggested that we needed $105.9 million in the adult system.
Yes.
And other, probably it wasn't in that report, but other estimates have added $10 to $15 million for the children's system.
Right. So let's just, again, be very clear about what level of investment this is, and let's not act like the crisis is over because of this investment, because it is not.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd just like to add on to Senator Gordley's comments. I'll be remonstrating today on the floor on the county-state shared services on mental health, and shamelessly using the doctor's nickel in both of them, nickels squared, information sent to me upon request that highlights exactly what he's been talking about and the need for preventive future, you know, in our future budgets, more preventive care, and how successful it is in the community. But we have just begun, but I have to say, you know, in these last days of session, as
we remain hopeful for whatever surprises may come. And I brought my Swiffer mop today. It's in the car. And because I'm going to be headed down every day down to Ways and Means and going over and catching with those little fine tooth every little bit of whatever's left and identifying it. I'm not saying I'm assigning it. I will identify it and make those appropriately to the right people. But I appreciate everything you do, and we really, Senator Gorley, you're just so right. Thank you for saying that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Ms. Baker?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. I think the other point of discussion before we get into the budget numbers is the website proposal. The co-chairs, as you remembered, suggested $400,000 general fund to develop a community-based network of care type website, and the committee wanted to hear more about what was being done in other areas relative to those websites and how the agency might plan to spend those funds.
I've asked Mr. Sankey and Mr. Tays to come up and join us. So, Mr. Sankey,
Madam Chair, with your permission, we have a system similar to what's being proposed for the $400,000 that's operating on the senior side and have seen quite a bit of benefit from that website. So what I'd like to do is have James Taves talk about the benefit we've seen, and then my belief is that the $400,000 is earmarked to roll this out on the mental health side, and so I will then have Bob Nickel talk about the benefits he sees for consumers on the mental health side. So with that, your permission, I'll turn it over to
Absolutely.
James.
Absolutely. Mr. Taves?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, James Tate from the Department of Human Services. I'll be very brief. Several years ago, the governor helped us launch this website as a major strategy for information and outreach to the senior population and to the boomers to really arm them with lots of information so they could help support themselves better. With a company out of California, we developed what's called a Network of Care. It's one of the most interactive websites I've ever seen. It has a resource directory of every area of the state of every conceivable issue for senior and disability services. Very simple to use. You're always a couple clicks away from the information you need. You can download information about services, income requirements, hours open. It'll map quest. It'll set up appointments. It does a lot of very extraordinary things. It also has a very extensive library that actually our case managers use extensively about medications and different combinations and reactions, lots of healthcare information, caregiving support information, and so it's very simple to use. Again, very senior and disability friendly. Right now, we launched this I think 2 years ago. It averages about 20,000 hits a month, so it's used very heavily across our communities, and it's something that we update on the resource library is updated on a very regular basis, and our community agencies and area agencies on aging also update all the resource information on a fairly regular basis. It also allows you to set up, families even to set up secure sites where you can put all your medical information, articles about certain drugs, all compile in a private or separate file for yourself or for a family member or parent. So it's been something that's worked very well for us in the senior and disability area.
Madam Chair, I've had a chance to familiarize myself with this particular site. 3 years ago, when I first became the mental health commissioner, I had a chance to see this demonstrated in California. And I was very impressed with it. All the things that Mr. Cave says, I think, would be equally applicable to the mental health area. The National Alliance on Mental Illness would probably be overjoyed to see this kind of resource available to help sort out information. And I'd also like to add that many mental health consumers, although often initially may not have really good access to the internet, a lot of the peer support leaders are very clued into the internet, and I think they would also find this a real plus in terms of accessing resources.
Questions of the panel?
Madam Chair.
Senator Marcette, Ms. Boone, and Senator.
Thank you very much. I am familiar with the site, and I think it's essential for the boomer tsunami that we're going to experience soon. And the question was raised, I think, before about, you know, the patients actually having access. It's the families, it's the support groups, and the people who need access. And this is It's kind of a carrot approach because it forces providers to upgrade and be top of the line if they're going to be competing, and it does provide all the information that you could possibly need, or almost all the information you need. It's improving, and I think it's the counter wave of the future to take care of the people who are going to be in most need. I think it's great, and I urge support.
Thank you. And he said everything I would have said. So.
Well, I come at this through a different lens, and I ask myself the question, considering that these are general fund dollars, is this the highest priority for the use of general funds? I think that when we know that we have other human needs in the budget that we are not addressing, human needs, speaking to the needs of vulnerable populations, a website does not strike me as being the highest priority. And I appreciate that this is a project that the co-chairs, it's identified, as a project that the co-chairs want to fund. But I would hope that we would push back and let the co-chairs know that we've looked at these budgets, and we know that there are other human needs, vulnerable population needs in these budgets that are deserving of $400,000 in a general fund investment. I can't get there for a website.
Other discussion? Chairman Morissette?
The website is the means to the end, and it's the end that is important. It facilitates people who have the needs to fill the needs, and it facilitates the support groups. I think it is an essential part of our program. Now, we talked earlier about when we were talking about the mental health budget and, for instance, the worker amount. Why are we giving workers a raise? Well, because that's the small amount of money. And so on. This is a small amount of money, but it's an essential small amount of money. I think it goes beyond the website. It goes to the people who use the website. It's opening up a new world for people who are searching for assistance. And, basically, it's going to come sooner or later, and it's needed right now. And we have the program now. We have to continue to fund the program to expand it. I think it's essential.
Okay. Ms. Baker?
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, those were the issues that we had identified for further discussion. And at this point, if you're ready, we can move to the budget bill adjustments. We have a few. Okay, we have a few line item changes that we wanted to make sure you were aware of. And then we have a final summary of each of the program area budgets to be reviewed. I think we can cover these relatively quickly. We'll take maybe half a minute or a minute on each one, depending on how much information you need on these. The item one there under children, adults, and families, this is the impact of the repricing of the child welfare safety improvement package, where there were position reclassifications. Originally, 31 additional positions were added in the children, adults, and families budget. The repackaged package, if you will, ended up structuring those position changes differently. It kept more positions that were previously social services assistant positions, but in total it eliminated 11 more positions in the original package. It costs a little more in the children, adults, and families budget, and so you see the general fund and federal fund impact there. Overall, the package is within about $50,000 of where it originally was in the governor's budget between children, adults, and families and department-wide support services budget.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kutek. Thank you. Just a brief comment on this. I'm somewhat more comfortable with 101-2 since some of the restructuring I've met with the department. I just think that this is something we're going to need to watch. Again, going back to the workload study that's going to be implemented for the department, I don't want us to walk away with this thinking that this restructuring plan, while it might change some of the numbers around caseload, hasn't necessarily dealt with the workload issues. And I think we should just be careful about that. But I do think the restructuring has made this particular plan a little better in terms of the direct service component that we're not losing as much as before. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Item number 2 reflects what you just did on Senate Bill 414. This is the fiscal impact of that, as we talked about the tangible costs to the department for the additional Attorney General hours and then some database work there. So that's the general fund and the federal fund that we noted as the fiscal impact for that particular bill.
Members, line 3 is an adjustment to the health services budget area. This relates to House Bill 2406, which was creating a waiver for medically involved children so that they could remain in their own home. The overall fiscal has remained the same. It's just that the split needs some of the money, which was a total of about $1.4 million general fund, needs to go into the health services budget. We found out about this adjustment after we had a work session on the health services budget. The correct amounts are also in seniors and DWSS, but this needs to go into the health services budget. $220,000 general fund and related match. Lines 4 and 5 are corrections to the health services spreadsheets. On line 4, I inadvertently added 0.75 FTE when I should have deducted 0.75 FTE. So line 4 corrects that mistake. And on line 5, I took away one too many positions and 1.75 FTE. So this adjustment would correct that. On line 6, there is the addition of $200,000 general fund for durable medical equipment fee for service payments. As you'll recall, this was one area where the reimbursement was reduced in the governor's budget, and it is still reduced in the proposed budget that you have reviewed before. But this would add a little bit of that funding back. The overall cut in the general, in the governor's recommended budget was about $1.2 million general fund.
Madam Chair. Thank you. What does this bring this to in terms of reimbursement rates? What does this buy back for us with the half million?
Madam Chair and Representative Kotek, I'm not sure how much it buys back. The level was at 80% of Medicare cost in the governor's recommended budget. This may add back a percent or two, is my guess at this point.
Thank you. Madam Chair? Do we have a minute or two to hear from the department around the Healthy Teen Survey? At the work session the other day, I mentioned that I was wondering where that survey was going to be without the tobacco tax funding, and I noticed this adjustment made me think of it. Do we have a moment to hear from the department on that?
Just a couple of minutes. We'll see.
Colleagues, I do think the survey is very important, and it's had trouble finding sustainable funding. I want to make sure it's not going away in the next biennium, since I'm just curious what the status will be.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Bill Coulomb, Public Health Division, Department of Human Services. Representative Kotek, the Health Insurance the Healthy Teen Survey data is used by lots of partners, both community and research oriented. Our information for the Healthy Teen Survey is necessary for the need to estimate need of prevention and treatment services. It's used for monitoring statewide and regional trends. It helps us to plan and implement targeted prevention strategies, as well as assessing the influence of key risk factors, for example, such as alcohol and drug abuse by teens. And with me is Dr. Mel Cole, who can provide you some more specific data. Thank you.
Okay.
Chair Carter, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn, state epidemiologist at the Public Health Division of the Department of Human Services. And I'd just like to add a couple of things to what Bill has already said. This is incredibly important data. It's used by a huge variety of partners around the state. I wanted to just quickly mention some of them. Oregon Research Institute, the local commissions on children and families, police departments, county health departments, Department of Education, schools and school districts, our teen pregnancy prevention program. Mr. Coons already mentioned the mental health issues. Several of our chronic disease programs, the Healthy Kids Learn Better Coalition, the Coordinated School Health Program, and on and on and on. As I was preparing for this, I came across this report from Children First for Oregon on reducing health disparities among children that Representative Kotek, I believe, was involved in preparing. The health measures that are in here, every single one of them, comes from the Oregon Healthy Teen Survey. Without this survey, you would not have a report like this to do the kinds of policymaking that you're wanting to do. We also know that the data from the survey bring in what we know about is at least $20 million in grant money into the state for prevention activities. So this is a very, very important data source for us.
I think her question was, will we be keeping it for the next session?
Chair Carter, up until now, what we have had to do is cobble together the funding for this from any place we can beg it from. Typically, we get little drips and drabs that are leftovers from federal grants. This takes an enormous amount of staff time, and in addition, it's been very concerning to us that many of our sources of federal funding have been decreasing. And so I don't know whether we would be able to complete it fully the way we would like to for next session. I think it would be very problematic for us. We would do our best to do as much as we could if we weren't funded. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Ms. Baker?
Thank you. A very quick comment on durable medical services. This only applies to, not to you, it only applies to about 20% of the OHP population's fee for service only. And I tried to get numbers on what percentage of Medicare were paying for on different types of programs, and they really couldn't get them. I also wasn't able to find out what the managed care plans were paying for these same services also. So what I'm going to ask is that the department watch this carefully. These people are pretty sensitive to this. This is osteotomy care. This is diabetic checks. And if you don't get the services out to people, you're going to drive up care costs elsewhere. And as the department, be real careful to make sure that, in fact, this is adequate payment. We don't see people dropping, or more importantly, that the fee-for-service clientele can't get what they need. The department should monitor that and give us an idea next session. Thank you.
Good. I hope you guys heard what Dr. Bates was saying. Representative Wu?
And just to double back on that, that's not quite enough, but it's a movement in the right direction. It's absolutely right. And I was told today that there are some respiratory services provided to children that are going to be cut back because of this.
Thank you. Mr. Bergman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. With respect to the seniors and people with disabilities budget, there are two adjustments on lines 7 and 8. The first, in the work session that we had last week, we had removed this $2.4 million of general fund. Proposed the creation of a special purpose appropriation to the emergency board. This was money that the department was seeking from the Social Security Administration related to the Disability Determination Services Program. There was a audit finding by the Social Security Administration, which funds disability determination services. We had to repay $2.4 million. We were in the process of appealing that ruling. Since last week, I've learned and have a letter from the Oregon Department of Justice that they are no longer appealing that ruling. So we are not going to create a special purpose appropriation. We'll put this money back into the SPD budget.
Questions?
Can you tell us where it's designed to go then?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Boone, it is used just generally in the SPD budget. It doesn't have a specific earmark. The point was that if we had appealed that ruling and gotten other funds revenue back, then we would have saved $2.4 million of general fund by not allocating the special purpose appropriation.
Thank you.
The last change that we are recommending is additional funds for the Oregon Farm Direct Nutrition Program, a $49,000 general fund. This is a program like the WIC Farmers Market Program, whereby people are given vouchers that they can use at farmers markets to obtain fresh Oregon-grown fruits and vegetables.
Well, I please ask Ms. Speaker to go through the budget notes.
Madam Chair, before we get to the budget notes, we'll keep them in suspense a minute. We have the final House Bill 5031 work session summary spreadsheet that incorporates all of the budget adjustments that were discussed in previous work sessions on this bill, as well as the ones that we've just covered. So this is the two-page sheet. It shows for each of the appropriation lines within the Department of Human Services what the governor's recommended budget was, what the agency reshoot adjustments were, and then other legislative adjustments that have been presented to you. So the first page shows that again by appropriation line. I would note that this does not include the capital construction expenditures. Those are in House Bill 5006. The back page shows the recommended budget for the Department of Human Services in total there, and shows you comparisons both from the governor's original recommended budget and then from the governor's reshoot budget. So at this point, we would recommend that you move conceptual amendments to House Bill 5031 that reflect the budget as displayed on this spreadsheet, so that we can then request those amendments to the bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Wexler.
I move the conceptual amendments as displayed on the budget worksheet and as presented by LFO to House Bill 5031.
Senator Westland moves the conceptual amendments for the final House Bill 5031 and pass them to the full committee. Mm-hmm. To the large bill. So, and moving these conceptual amendments to the full committee on Ways and Means as a due pass. Are there any objections, any comments? So, we'd like to pass conceptual amendments to the bill and then to the bill to the full committee.
Madam Chair.
Senator Westland.
I move House Bill 5031 as amended by the conceptual amendments to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Westland moves House Bill 5031 conceptual amendments to the full committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Comments? Objections? Seeing none, so ill.
Madam Chair, at this point, we'd like to review with the subcommittee the budget notes. These have been reviewed by the co-chairs and by Senator Carter as well. Our recommendation at this point is that you allow us just to present them, to do a quick summary of why they're in front of you, and then hold questions until the end so that we can move through these and then get to the performance measures, which we also have to do before 2:30 today.
Lots of them.
In
The first proposed budget note relates to the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families Program, the restructured program. This directs the department to report at the time of each department rebalance on what's happening with that program, and also...
Can you hold for a minute? Let me just make a statement, because many of you had budget notes in. The co-chairs had our analysts to integrate many of the budget notes, because we had a book this full of budget notes. And so what we've tried to do is to coordinate them in such a way and have them put in a form that is acceptable in terms of what budget notes are, as opposed to looking at sometimes policy issues. And so that's what we have done, and you might not see your budget note as you saw it, or if there are any questions after this, what we can do is talk with the co-chairs regarding them. Some budget notes did not make it, and it's my regret, but the co-chairs are the ones that are in charge. And so I want to just make sure I make that statement before Ms. Baker gets started. Excuse me for the interruption.
So, again, the first budget note relates to the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families Program, reporting on the status of that program as they roll out the restructured effort, and directs the department to continue working with the Family Services Review Commission and other stakeholders during the interim to look at how that program is affecting program clients, to look at the program outcomes and consider potential program improvements. And then the department's supposed to come back to the next legislative session on what its findings have been and any recommendations.
The second proposed note relates to the Managed Care Integrated Delivery System. This is a direction to DHS to prepare a report on developing an integrated delivery system of health care for Medicaid clients, and the report will investigate ways to reduce system fragmentation and so on. You can read that. The department, and most importantly, I think, is line four. In addition, the report shall include a proposal for the integration of Oregon Health Plan behavioral and physical health services. Today, those are two separate managed care enterprises, fully capitated health plans and the mental health organizations, and this report would include a proposal to integrate those two systems. This, the department will work with appropriate stakeholders to prepare the report and present it to appropriate interim legislative committees, including the emergency board, by June 30th, 2008. The third budget note relates to Senate Bill 328. This bill passed the Senate. It is scheduled for the House this afternoon, and it relates to the Juvenile Psychiatric Security Review Board. We had a good discussion in subcommittee about this particular bill, and this budget note would direct the Department of Human Services and the Psychiatric Security Review Board to report to the emergency board on their progress of implementing Senate Bill 328 when the department presents its budget rebalance plans. And the report contents are listed here. The report shall include demographic data such as age, ethnic or racial identification, gender, geographic location, and other pertinent information. Budget note four has to do with the Oregon State Hospital revenue and costs. As you know, both in the department's rebalance plan this past spring in Senate Bill 5547 and also in the reshoot adjustments that we reviewed earlier in May and then again last week, there was a considerable amount more general fund going to the Oregon State Hospital than had been proposed in the governor's budget. We continue to want to monitor that activity very closely, and we are requesting you to direct DHS to report on actual revenue and costs as compared to budget, again, at when the department presents its rebalance requests. Budget note five directs both the Departments of Human Services and Transportation to work together to investigate sources of new revenue, to enhance funding for elderly and disabled transportation services with consideration for both urban and rural Oregon, and the departments shall report their findings to the Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management Division and the Legislative Fiscal Office prior to the 2009 legislative session.
Madam Chair. Senator Bloodley?
I just see a little irony in the wording of this budget note. It's too bad we don't have a budget note that directs the legislature to investigate sources of new revenue, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I just couldn't let the moment pass.
Thank you, Senator Gordon. Your point is well taken.
Budget note six has to do with the seniors and people with disabilities, long-term planning and acuity of care models. DHS shall report to the emergency board by June 30th, 2008 and to the 2009 Legislative Assembly on the work that it has done already on comprehensive and ongoing planning efforts. The draft report for this work came out in May of 2006, the recommendations on the future of long-term care in Oregon. And this report to the E-Board and 2009 Assembly would kind of highlight that activity and the work that has been done already and work that remains to be done. The report shall include a discussion of recommendations for system changes, reimbursement rates, and access for eligible clients, necessary Medicaid waivers, the development of an acuity-based care reimbursement system, and a timetable for implementing the proposed changes. And in preparing the report, DHS should continue to work with appropriate stakeholders and advocates for senior and disability services.
I'm going to make a comment. For all of you baby boomers out there, you hear those of us that have passed the baby booming stage who are begging for money for services, whether it be elderly, transportation, or anything else. The graying of Oregon is a reality. And unless we do something about long-term care in this state, you will regret as you get even older that you have not been a part of advancing the not only discussion, but the resources that are necessary to help to continue to build the long-term foster care system in this state. I'm just saying that to you for whatever it's worth. If you decide you want to do nothing, you will get to that age and you will regret it. So it is now in your hands in terms of what we do in this state as it relates to long-term care services. We have an honest man who has given his life in the name, in the form of James Tiggs, who has given his life to making sure that we stay halfway honest in dealing with long-term care services in this state. And I will tell you, if we didn't have somebody that compassionate and that determined in this area, we'd be in bad shape. And so all of you baby boomers, it's in your hands.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morissette.
It's worth about $250 million.
Yeah, but they need to do something about it. We don't need to be scared about it. You just need to do something about it. You need to see how we're going to take care of it.
Madam Chair, I think this is a huge priority during this interim, and I think that some of us will be back next time with the services that are needed and the price tag that goes with it, and hope that we fly above the radar screen next time instead of below it.
Yeah, it's a serious issue. Thank you.
I have to say, I think that Senator Morissette and Senator Gordley are on target. And hope that, and just to get it on the record, I hope that now there are some services and wishes that are going unmet this session with requests to review them in the interim. And I hope that next session, those who got theirs this time will be generous enough to give over to the next group that had to wait this session.
Absolutely. Mr. Burton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Budget Note 7 relates to managed care organizations and hospitals, and it is an expression of expectations of the legislature, so it's a bit unusual. It is the expectation of the legislature that managed care plans and the hospitals with whom they contract work together to ensure there is appropriate access to and coordination of services for Medicaid beneficiaries enrolled in managed care plans. Hospitals and managed care plans are expected to work closely to achieve reasonable payment schedules within the funds available. The Department of Human Services is directed to report to the 2009 Legislative Assembly on the status of contracts between hospitals and managed care plans.
Madam Chair?
Senator Kotel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if there's an expectation that Budget Note 2 and Budget Note 7 will somehow be integrated.
Madam Chair and Representative Kotek, when we present these budget notes to you, the expectation, I guess, is that they're going to be approved or perhaps modified in some way. But the co-chairs have approved these as they are. Our plan is not to change them if it's the subcommittee's approval of these things.
If I just may thought, that might be a comment more to the department that I see these things as there's overlap here, and I want to make sure that we're not submitting different reports that aren't talking to each other. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I wish I could say something, but I think it's definitely a Margaret Carter issue in the sense that when we were negotiating provider taxes.
Yes.
So let me not say any more since I am still wavering from that one.
No, here.
Senator Bates.
Just a quick comment. This is the first time I've seen this budget note, and one part of it strikes me as very strange. That's the part about appropriate access to and coordination of services for Medicaid beneficiaries enrolled in managed care plans. I would offer that managed care plans, the Medicaid managed care plans, what we call our FCHIPs, do a better job of getting appropriate access and coordination of services in the healthcare industry than any other part of that healthcare industry, whether the insurance companies, rather than self-insured entities. They do a great job, so I'm not sure what that part of the budget note really means.
They will love you truly.
And I just think they do a great job. I don't get it. The second part, the second sentence, is extremely important. This has been a bone of contention for 10, 15 years. It will continue to be a problem, and I appreciate you asking for this to be reported in 2009.
Right.
When the provider tax, again, has to be renewed and looked at.
Absolutely.
So it'll be a fun time to look at that part of it. But the first part, I frankly don't understand.
Well, sir, trust me, for anybody who will come to do negotiations on the provider tax the next time around, you will love us dearly for having put this piece in.
I will look forward to that discussion.
Thank you.
Budget Note 8 is the study of Type A and B hospital reimbursement. This directs both the Oregon Office of Health Policy and Research and DHS to conduct a study of Medicaid reimbursement for Type A and B hospitals. The study shall review and analyze the current methods used to determine Medicaid reimbursement for these hospitals, if appropriate, include recommendations for changes to reimbursement, and estimate the fiscal impact of these recommendations. The office and DHS shall present the results of the study to appropriate interim legislative committees, including the emergency board, by June 30th, 2008.
Number nine
actually came out of the discussion that this subcommittee had back on April 2nd with the department when we were discussing health disparities. DHS is directed to report to the emergency board by June 30th, 2008 on its efforts to reduce health care disparities among the variety of racial and ethnic populations served by OHP. The report should include a discussion of the ways the Office of Multicultural Health within the Public Health Division has collaborated with the Division of Medical Assistance Programs to develop and implement strategies to achieve this goal. As an introduction, the report should discuss the costs of health care disparities and the benefits of reducing those disparities. And members will see a budget performance measure in just a moment related to this particular budget note.
Okay.
Finally, number 10, the Oregon State Hospital Project. As Ms. Baker noted earlier, the expenditure limitation for the capital construction of the new hospital is not in House Bill 5031. Nonetheless, we are recommending this budget note that the Department of Human Services is directed to report to the 2008 special session and to the emergency board at each of its meetings during the 2007-09 interim on the Oregon State Hospital replacement project. The report should include information on financing, expenditures, and other significant project issues. The report is in addition to the joint reporting required by budget note of the department and the Department of Corrections on the Junction City property. And the reference here is to a budget note that was included in the Department of Corrections budget report. So this is an additional report. This is about a $500 million project over 8 to 10 years. Our belief is that the legislature needs to monitor this project carefully.
I hope that what you see as part of your budget notes, that kudos is certainly in order for the co-chairs, because I did not think that they would accept this minute budget notes as they did, and so I want to thank them for that. But I hope that we have captured in these budget notes the things that especially the members of this committee have put forward as it relates to budget notes. Any further comments on these?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're taking actions on an enormous budget today, and it might seem to some that it's with very little discussion or thought, but really it's following 6 months of discussion and thought and hard work. So I wanted to assure everyone who might be listening or watching this that just because there's not 7 hours of discussion and debate, it doesn't mean there haven't been 700 or 7,000 hours of work behind this. Also, many people in the building understand that there's generally some little bit of fine-tuning that continues to happen until the very last day. And I anticipate we'll still see some of that as well.
Thank you. Representative
Fulton? Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say that I think this is a very nice list of budget notes. There's certainly things we could add, but this is pretty comprehensive. It's a lot of work for the department. What I'd like to see is that the substantive committees that would be meeting in the interim, either the Human Services or the Health Care committees, also take up some of these issues to provide some policy backup discussion to get us into the next session, because I think there's some things here that got brought up in some of those committees that we could probably have further discussion on. So I'll see if we can have some collaboration there so we're not leaving the budget apart from the policy discussion on some of these.
No, not at all. This is what you should have placed. That's the access point for all of these budget notes to take place through our health committees and other committees that have been assigned by the president and speaker. So all of these will be discussed within the framework of one or some of those committees.
Okay.
During the interview.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You ready for a motion, Madam Chair?
Motion.
Madam Chair, I move the committee approve the DHS budget notes as enumerated by LFO in their memorandum dated June 19, 2007.
So, do I move that the budget notes as gone over by
LFO.
That's by LFO. I'm trying to think of Mr. Britton. Mr. Britton and Ms. Baker on today, the 19th, the extra budget will be accepted. Discussion or objections? Thank you. Ms. Baker?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. The last piece related to the budget that we need to review with you today are the proposed key performance measures for 2007-09. We won't necessarily go through these individually, both because of the time constraints today and because there were discussion on the existing measures as we went through the individual program area presentations. I will note that our recommended approach for these key performance measures for the upcoming biennium is that you approve the department's existing measures. In some cases, we have changed the targets for 2008 and 2009, and there's a discussion of those changes in the second part of the document that you've just received. But with those modifications, we would recommend you keep the existing measures for 2007-09, add, I believe there's four new measures that we will talk about in the next few minutes, and then have the department during the interim review all of its measures and come into the Joint Legislative Audit Committee in fall of 2008 with recommendations, because there are some of these measures that we think are excellent. There are some of them that we think don't really capture what the department is doing and what their role in the issue is. And so we recommend that the agency take a comprehensive look at that, come into the Joint Legislative Audit Committee in fall of 2008 with proposed, another set of proposed measures for 2009-11 that then there would be discussion on during the budget hearings during the next session. So that's our general approach. I think if we want to touch on the proposed new measures here, if that's your pleasure, that's how we proceed.
I think it would be the new measures, because I'm sure our members, through this whole process, have gone over the key measure performance.
On page one, then, between existing measure number 6 and existing measure number 7, there's a new measure there. It's labeled TANF Family Stability. This is a measure that the department had proposed to track. Proposed to track the number of children in her foster care who had received TANF cash assistance within the previous 2 months. And we suggested, rather than as a number, that be measured as a percentage. In the last reported fiscal year, they were at about 26%. So about 26% of the children entering foster care had received TANF cash assistance in the previous 2 months. The targets would be set so that for 2008, the target would be 24%, and for 2009, we'd expect further reduction to 22%. And this reflects the funding that's in the TANF restructuring package, including funding for the Family Supporting Conventions program. And as you remember, during the Children, Adults, and Families work session, the funding that was in the governor's budget originally for that program was enhanced in the legislative action. So we think this is a good measure and should see some good performance there.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm pleased to hear that we'll be seeing some new measures from the department in the fall of next year. I think that's a wise, this is a lot of work to do, and I know they have to go back to the drawing board. I'm particularly not happy with the TANF ones in general. I think they don't reflect the redesign of what we're trying to achieve. But the one around TANF family stability, I would certainly hope, with the investments we are making, that we will see much more of a drop than what we're predicting here. Because 2 months having been in TANF prior to entering the child welfare system, 26% is unacceptable. And if we are doing something seriously wrong with our redesign, if we only drop a couple percentage points, I really, truly believe that. So we might want to make those a little stiffer, or I think we really have to watch this, because really we should be doing things differently enough that those families are not feeling that child welfare is the way to go for those kids in TANF. If we're assessing them correctly and making sure they have the supports, their kids should not be going to child welfare. Thank you.
Comments? Senator Woodley?
I would just offer that the mental health performance measures need to be consistent in terms of language with the language that is that I've seen recently in the document that was created to illustrate outcomes in addictions and mental health. Just looking for consistency in language. The outcomes that we're achieving are dramatic, but the language as it is presented here doesn't quite match up with the language I've seen in a previous document. I'd just be concerned about that.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think I would, turning to page two, there's three new measures that are within John Britton's area of expertise, so I'll turn it over to him. Mr. Britton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Down between lines 18 and 19, or the measures 18 and 19, are two new measures that the co-chairs in particular favored. The first is to measure the effectiveness of alcohol and drug treatment, and this is the percentage of adults employed after receiving alcohol and drug treatment. The actual result during the 2005-06 fiscal year was 66%. We've set targets here at 70%. Likewise, the second one also measures alcohol and drug treatment effectiveness, and this is the percentage of parents who have their children return to their custody after receiving alcohol and drug treatment. The result in 2005-06 was 49%. The targets are 52% and 55%, respectively. The final new measure follows measure 19, again, alcohol and drug treatment effectiveness, the percentage of children whose school performance improves after receiving alcohol and drug treatment. The actual result in 2005-06 was 58%. The targets here are 60 and 62%, respectively.
Madam Chair, that, unless there's questions, those are our recommendations.
Please keep in mind that this department will be working new KPMs with the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. But this is just to give them some guidance during this period of time.
Madam Chair, I think the new A&D ones are very helpful. And just to get back to the other one, I was not directing my frustration at anybody in LFO or anyone on this committee. I think it's just an ongoing frustration about the connection between those two programs and how we're dealing with it, something that I hope redesign will solve. So
yeah.
I just want to clarify that.
No, I think that's appropriately placed. Thank you very much. But for the department, I really, really, because there's so many questions always asked around performance measures and the area, Bob, of drug and alcohol. So I hope that we have the kind of instruments that would give us data that we could have that people will see that we, it's not just something soft that we're doing, but there are outcomes, and we do measure success in the social sciences, and so we need somewhat of a blueprint for being able to show that. And so it's back to the point that Representative Kotek was making, especially with us reorganizing the TANF piece, the reauthorization piece around TANF, and so that we can have some good data as well. We appreciate your hard work.
Madam Chair.
You guys are doing a lot, and so kids know we don't want to just superimpose things on you, but the more data we have in convincing legislators about those areas that seem so soft to them, the better off all of us are going to be in providing services. Senator Morset.
Thank you. I want to join Senator Gordley in calling attention to the lack of an alcohol recovery fee. One more time. We're not going to get it this time. That would go a long way in the addiction services, alcohol, drug, mental health. We need more resources. Alcohol tax, beer tax, would go a long way to solve that problem.
So that means all of us have a lot of work to do, not just convincing the legislature, but convincing constituents out there in the state of Oregon about the needs around these issues. Senator Gordley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we adjourn, I should have declared a potential conflict of interest before the vote on House Bill 1531. I serve on a volunteer commission that will advise Oregon Health Sciences University and other partners on the development of mental health services for the African American population in Portland and Oregon.
Thank you. Your approval of the performance measures?
Madam Chair.
Senator Westlin?
You know, as long as we're in this particular environment this session, I too would like to declare a potential conflict of interest on House Bill 5031, as I have a relationship with a DCO.
You may, Senator Bates.
Ditto.
Any other conflict? Thank you very much. They're all so noted.
Madam Chair, I move the committee adopt the performance measures, key performance measures related to House Bill 5031.
Senator Westland moves that we adopt the key performance measures for 0709 for the Oregon Department of Human Services, House Bill 5031. Constructive criticism, no objection. Thank you, Senator Garrard.
Madam Chair, I'll just declare a conflict of interest with Senator Westland.
You know, if we were having a party this year, you would have to receive the Comedy Award. You've been a delight. Thank you so much, Senator Westland.
Madam Chair, I move we've already done this.
We're good.
Okay.
Be
careful, though.
Madam Chair. I want to make a quick statement, just very quickly.
Sure.
I appreciate the work you've done and everyone on this table has done and what Mr. Britton and Mrs. Baker have done for this budget. I think it's a good budget considering the environment you're in. And I want to comment on that environment just for now. This is a $12 billion-plus budget we're putting out today. And if you think we've done enough for mental health and alcohol and drug and rural health and Oregon Health Plan, instead of not being opened up, for our children, the DD community, what we've done for seniors, we all know we haven't done enough.
Right.
But we're in an environment where we've dropped in Oregon from about the 25th in the nation as far as revenue collected to into the 40s somewhere. You can debate where it's at, but it's in the 40s somewhere. And we're now dealing with ballot measures passed by the citizens of the state, Special Ballot Measure 5, that shifted its funding in these budgets towards K-12 and shifted away from human services. We also have not funded properly LFO. Mrs. Baker and Mr. Britton have worked extremely hard to look at a $12 billion budget for us. I know of no company in the world that would allow two people to have to work at a $12 billion budget. I appreciate the work they've done, but it's an impossible task for two people. There should be 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 people looking at this, including accountants, to see if these programs are really effective and if they're efficient. When do we know those things? So many of these other things in the future. Our real question for the next legislative assembly should be, what's our revenue sources? We should have a discussion of revenue that I know nobody wants to have. And we need to start taking care of those people in our services that we need to get this information to us. We are a part-time legislature. I'm going to sign off our $12 billion budget today. If you ask me any really in-depth questions about it, I would have a hard time getting an answer out for you. But I appreciate the hard work of everybody on the committee, and especially you, Madam Chair, trying to put this together the best possible way you could, considering the real restrictions on you and on our budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Motions of order from a few minutes ago. Thank you. So, a House volunteer? Michael's coming over there. House volunteers. Thank you, Representative Boone.
Okay. I have to give my friends a chance to speak.
I'll carry the budget on the Senate. I guess my committee is going to be shocked because they always carry budgets, and this is the first one I'm carrying. So the full, Dr. Bates. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nancy volunteered.
I guess we weren't clear if this was to the full committee or to the floor, because it is a big budget to carry. We could all work through it together or something.
We can all carry it. It's a big
budget. Let's just get it through quietly.
Well, we won't give it to Garrard.
Yes, please, ma'am. Ms. Baker, would you give us the rest of the week's budget, please?
Oh, it's not budget. I mean,
schedule.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, this is the last budget
that you had assigned to the subcommittee that you have now completed your budget work on budget bills. There may be some substantive policy bills that are still coming to the committee. We don't know that for sure, so please just keep an eye on the schedule.
Anything else for the good of the order?
I cannot thank you enough for your work on these budgets. And I don't care what anybody says. Women always agree on how things should be. And it should not have done that we all agreed. It should have had the healthy debate and the discussions that we have had. So I appreciate that a lot. And but I tell you what, I don't believe that there is a better committee in this whole body, because I appreciate your witticism. I appreciate your intelligence. I appreciate your work, that you have done the work when you came here. And I appreciate that a lot. I appreciate very, very much the work that we've had with most prestigious two Republican members, both very and Representative Morgan, who has had some challenges with staff and friendship losses this session, but you were right here. You've been just really a tiger, and I really appreciate that a lot, and appreciate when both of you gave us opportunity for courtesy. I don't know of another committee that has worked this well. I have to tell you that and have not heard it. So I appreciate all of you guys very much. And if I was giving out an award, I'm telling you for attendance, Senator Marcet, who's not even a voting member of this committee, would get it. Would he not? I'm clapping for this man. He's just been wonderful. So thank you very, very much, and thank you, audience, for participating.